Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. We're on a series of programs about service, and just to recap how we got here, in January, I had a New Year's program, and in the meditation, these words came up: love, gratitude, compassion. And in my musing about how I would start the new year and the programs in the new year, I decided to use these qualities and see where they led us in our work with Reiki. So we've had interviews about what love means, what it means in our practice of Reiki, compassion, different forms of and different ideas about what compassion is. We've talked about gratitude, and how gratitude is also a way for people to come to their spirituality and to their practice of spirit, and how that works in our practice of Reiki. And we've talked about service, which was the next obvious place to go. And some of the conversations that we've had this last month have been about service and Reiki. Service as a spiritual practice, service in other forms. And now today we have the opportunity to talk to Carol Wirtz, and she's going to tell us a little bit about her life. And her life is a life where she's chosen to be in service, and I would say as a vocation. Now in English, because a lot of you listeners are not necessarily English speakers, first of all, vocation in English, the way that I use it, is something that has is more than just work. It's more than a job. A job is sort of something that you do in order to earn money, and work can be something that involves other parts of you, not just your willingness and motivation to have food and shelter, but also to nourish yourself in other ways. And a vocation is something that actually, for me, is what is my calling as a Reiki master, is a vocation for me. It's something that came from my spirit. I had, in some way, no choice about it. I just knew that that's what I was going to do, even though I didn't know it consciously, in my case. But in most cases of people becoming Reiki masters, they might have a motivation like to teach people Reiki, but there's another calling underneath that has to do with the soul, as far as I can see. And Carol Wirtz has had a calling of her own, and she belongs to an order called the Sisters of Charity. And they live just outside of El Paso, Texas. And I'd like to bring Carol in now and introduce her to you and to ask her if she would share a little bit about her story of her vocation, her calling to service. And Carol, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Colin.
Carol, can you just share with us a bit about how you, I don't know when it started, your calling, and if you would actually call it that, a calling to a vocation?
Yes. First of all, Phyllis, I just want to comment. I really loved how you described vocation and kind of a calling of the soul and how you were called.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
For me, it feels more like it chose me rather than I chose it.
Uh-huh.
I remember when I was very young, maybe 8 years old, I don't even know where it came from, but I wanted to be a missionary. I wanted to be of service. I guess when I was a child, I didn't really know what that meant, but there was something in me that wanted to go out and help others. I also remember as a child, because I lived in a really small town, we didn't have a library and I liked to read. So I went up to our little country church, and in the basement, there was a library of the lives of the saints. And so one by one, I read each of those stories. And it was so, their lives are so intriguing, this life of service and giving yourself to God to be of service.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where it began. And I would say all through my life until I decided to become a sister, which was 25 years ago, it was always like in the background, always this kind of pulling at a soul level, even though my mind and had a lot of different ideas of how I would live my life. And so kind of simultaneously, there were these two tracks going.
Uh-huh.
And when after I graduated from college, I had a choice. I was a teacher, to stay on and teach or go off and do some volunteer service work. And I met the Franciscans in college, and a Franciscan sister told me about a little mission school down in Zuni, New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
But this would be a great way to explore and see. I'd never really been around sisters before, so I was kind of intrigued to see what their lives were like. And so I shared community with them. I shared prayer. I was really impressed with their lives, their dedication of service.
Mm-hmm.
And before I knew it, I was signing up.
Wonderful.
The whole idea of living in common, sharing what you have in common for the common good, having a group of people that shared your same spirituality and focus was very intriguing to me. So I began the discernment and with the sisters.
Uh-huh.
I think community has always been in the forefront of priorities, I guess.
Uh-huh.
I grew up in a small town where there was a lot of community. There was a lot of church community, a lot of community in the school.
Mm-hmm.
The whole idea of community is something that I would hold as one of my values that I want to be a part of. And so living in community seemed like a natural lifestyle for me, would you say?
Uh-huh. Right. Well, I can really relate to you as far as living in a small town, because the town I grew up in was 1,000 people, and it was the biggest town around for like a radius of 20 or 30 miles in the outback of Iowa. So I realized when I moved here to Green Valley and had neighbors that were like, we each had our own little apartment, but they were just like next door, literally. And I started having people drop in for coffee or conversation or something. And I didn't have to have an appointment with my friends to see them. I realized how much I missed that small town community. It was really wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's nice as I've grown older to be able to come back to that kind of community.
Yeah, I think that's, for me, I'm really grateful to have grown up in a small town. When I was growing up, I thought I was missing so much out there. You know, we have nothing here. We just have people. And but now I can look back, and I'm really grateful for that opportunity. To small town.
Yeah, beautiful. And how did you meet Reiki?
Well, I heard about Reiki maybe 5 years before I actually learned Reiki. And when I would hear people describe it, I just like, I don't know. And I just didn't feel this urge to like want to learn.
Uh-huh.
Now, one day I met Jean Ferris. She came into the clinic that I was working in. And there was something different about Jean. And then she told me about Reiki, and there was something inside who said, oh yes, you want to learn this. It was like one of those things of not my head, but in my heart, like this, yes, there's, when I make a decision, I know there's this knowing inside. I guess it's at a heart level.
Yes.
And I thought, I didn't know much about it. I thought, I want to learn it. So that's when the journey began. So about, I think it was like 1998.
Oh, really? Wow. That's a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's see. That's 11 years? 11, 12, 13?
11.
Yeah. Wow. I'm sorry, it's too early in the morning. I can't subtract. But anyway, that was a while ago. So how has that been for you to have Reiki? Like, do you use it in your work? I know that you have, so here's a question. I know that you have a massage practice, and that's one of the ways that you serve the community, but also you can then bring in income for your order. Is that true?
Yes. I have a practice. I have about three different things going on here.
Uh-huh.
First of all, let me just back up on one of my first experiences with Reiki and
okay.
how it kind of led into another, one of my ministries.
Okay.
I had just learned, and one of our sisters was going through breast cancer, and she was having radiation treatments. And I had just learned Reiki, and I was visiting Cincinnati, and I said, well, do you want me to try this Reiki that I just learned? And, anyway, it was incredible, the relief she got from the burning. It was like, you know, her burning sensation pain just disappeared. I thought, wow, this is really powerful, and I didn't have to do anything. I was just here. So that kind of led into me working with breast cancer patients. My sister also had breast cancer, and I used it with her and my mom. And so then that kind of led to a ministry of working with breast cancer patients. And I used Reiki with everyone, and along with my lymphedema training.
Mm-hmm.
So those two just work very well together. I just found Reiki is compatible with pretty much everything I do. But that was kind of what an entryway into that working with breast cancer patients. I thought this is really valuable. It's something that can be used.
Uh-huh. Well, that is really beautiful. And just as an insert, I met Carol now a little over a year ago when I was involved in doing my chemotherapy, and she came over at the beginning of last year, and with Jean Ferris and her sister Hera, who have both been on the show, and Carol came with them, and she did a lymph drainage work on me, which was fabulous, and did some Reiki with Jean and or Hera, and it was really a highlight in my trip with chemotherapy. And since I've been able to go to El Paso and have other treatments, which have been good, and I just really was very impressed. And you know, it's so funny because whenever I have one of these experiences with Reiki, I just think, how could I be surprised that it's so effective? But it is, and I love that discovery feeling again. You know, it's like, well, it's just a part of my life, and I do it every day, and I have Reiki treatments and so on. And then something like this happens where you get such an incredible amount of relief that you go, is there a part of me that doesn't believe still? I don't know what that is, but that was one of my experiences is when I first met you was, wow, this stuff really works and it's wonderful.
Well, I think as you're talking, I can share the same experience. It's like, wow, I can't believe it. And I think it's one of the things I love about Reiki is that mystery. It's kind of like, you know, just seeing when you think you have things figured out, or first of all, I think it's a gift from God. It's a wonderful gift. And because it's a gift and it's nothing that we do, we're only the vessels there, you know, allowing the Reiki to flow through us, that it, when it continues to be amazing and show itself in different facets and whatnot, to me, that's like being odd with God all the time. Like, you never know, like, how it's going to show up or what it's going to do. Like, and knowing that we aren't doing it, that always keeps me humble, and that, you know, I just need to show up, be there, and allow, and let God, let Reiki, whatever, do what it does.
Uh-huh. Well, you did it to me. It was great. And I didn't realize that part of your practice was really devoted to treating breast cancer, because that's a wonderful ministry in and of itself.
For probably the last 8 years.
Oh, wow.
I see other clients, but mostly.
And to just go off on a little bit of a different tact, I'm wondering how you would define, or how would you describe the, well, I don't want to say the word, but I would say the quality of being of service, or of service. We had the last gal that I interviewed, was from England, and she does a lot of volunteer coordination. That's a part-time job she has. And it was very interesting to talk to her about how volunteerism and service often go together, and they, but they seem very different to me than a kind of service that comes from another, maybe it's the place it comes from, I don't know. Can you help me out?
I definitely think it's the place it comes from. I think you can have three people out doing the same thing. Not all of them are doing service, maybe one is. I do believe that service comes from the heart. And it's like that same thing that, I think the motivation, there is no motivation other than to give, to help another, to help relieve suffering. If you get compensated for it, great. If you get compensated with money, or if it's another way, but that's not the first priority. First priority, above all, is giving of yourself, your talents, your gifts, or allowing God to work through you to help another. I guess because I grew up Christian in the Catholic Church, my whole basis for servanthood would be the teachings of Jesus, and just read the gospel. It's all about service. I came to serve, not to be served. Help the poor, help those who are in need. There's so much, and I think that comes from, there never was like, do it because you're gonna look good, or you're gonna make money, or, you know, it's anything to do. But it just, it really comes from a place of wanting and to give. And I think another, indication, you know, when you give, I mean, we're all one, and when one is relieved of suffering, you feel it. When one experiences joy, you feel the joy. So I think it's a real thing of the heart, and that's where it comes from.
That's beautiful. Well, you know, I was just thinking about, I do a lot of reading myself, and there are all these books out there that I read, mostly novels. And I have this wonderful image when I think about service of people in the 1800s, women in the 1800s, you know, kind of wanting to do more than just be in the household, and especially those who were fortunate enough to have rich husbands. And they would sweep into hospitals or something with their beautiful dresses and baskets on their arms, or maybe their servants with baskets on their arms. And, minister to the sick and the poor, you know, in hospitals. And, I don't know why I have this image, but it's been really interesting. And I realized that, some of the attitudes I have about service come from this image. It's like, I don't want to serve people that I feel are less than me. I want to be able to serve them in a way that allows them their dignity and their willingness to be my equal on some level. And You know, it's such an interesting, I don't know, dance, I guess we could call it, between sort of being magnanimous and having these sweeping skirts and coming in, and yet there is a place where I also see that the motivation of these women were really to do something that they could do to relieve suffering. And I feel that the people who received it in that way were relieved and were very grateful. So I'm just wondering if you have this, so I have a little confusion sometimes in myself about what does it mean, this phrase selfless service, and how can I get there? Because I always feel like I have, there's some holdback in me about service.
Well, for me, I'll just give, I guess, some stories. It's easier for me
Yeah, that'd be great.
to. We also have, first of all of us in our house, all the sisters here practice Reiki. We're all Reiki practitioners. And, we have a little clinic over in Mexico, and offer it for handicapped children. We've been have it for about maybe 10 years. And, so our, you know, we're going over there to, cause our priest friend asked us to go over there and to help. So that's our motivation. But as the ministry has unfolded, you know, you have these moments where, oh my God, I'm the poor person here who's being transformed. It's, you know, it's kind of like this dance of who's ministering to who, who's the servant to who, like who's, you know, it all kind of gets mixed up as far as like, who's helping who? And I've been helped so many ways. My heart, you know, I don't know what I'd be like if I didn't have this ministry over there. I've learned so much, and my heart has been opened and hurt and transformed in many different ways. So, you know, I think sometimes, I mean, God's pretty clever. He can use us in any way to help us be transformed. You know, we may have the motivation or the intention of whatever, but sometimes, you know, it gets all turned around, and you know, I think God can use anybody for anything at any time. But I want to tell you a story.
Okay, good.
We had one day at the clinic. This was kind of the beginning of when we knew we needed to work with handicapped children. We came to the clinic, and there was a mother who was sitting on the step, and she had this child about 8 years old, and he was just, he was blind, and he was hitting himself and spasming, and just, I just thought, oh my goodness, what can we do for him? And she said, they told us, someone told me the sisters could help me. So we put the child, we took him in the clinic, and laid him on the bed, and there were five of us living here that all knew Reiki. So we all just laid our hands on the child, and it was one of the most powerful experiences that I've had of Reiki. The child within 15 minutes totally relaxed, fell asleep, and the mother just started crying, and she said, I've never seen him like relax like that and let go. And it was a powerful experience for us as well, knowing that, you know, being allowing Reiki to do this. And we all saw it when we all felt it. And that kind of began the experience of Reiki in the clinic. So I had the idea of maybe we could bring Jean over to teach some of the mothers how to do Reiki on the children. And that didn't happen for maybe 4 years, until 4 years later. But Jean has come over and has taught probably 16 or 17 of the mothers. And just seeing the transformation in the mothers and the children, is awesome to me, because, you know, you have this idea of, you know, what we can do, and it's like, it's nothing compared to what can be done when we have, how many people, 20 people doing Reiki in the clinic. Just seeing the transformation in the children and the mothers has been really awesome.
That's really beautiful. What a beautiful story. So, it seems like you've had this clinic for a while. How long did you say that you...
We started going over there in about 99, so 11 years maybe.
Wow. And how is it now with the whole border thing? Is it scary to go over, or do you feel fine about going across the border? Does it matter?
I don't know. It's scary in my mind, but in my heart, it's okay. I mean, I'd rather, you know, if something would happen, I'd rather be doing what I love doing than not going because I'm fearful.
Uh-huh.
And the mothers, you know, they all come, and it's a joyful, happy place. It's a bright light in their lives, and I couldn't tell them we're not going to come over because we're scared. And
right, right. So,
I trust, you know, whatever happens, happens, but for now, it's okay. It's a wonderful, loving place, and I enjoy it. I go there because I love to go there.
Uh-huh. That's beautiful. So, can you describe it a little bit? Like, you have a little house, or you have a room, or, and people just come through word of mouth, or?
Yeah, we have, it's we built on it 2 times, so it's a pretty big place. Made out of straw bales. We started off, we were doing all the treatments, and then more and more children started coming. We probably serve 25 to 30 children now, 35.
Wow.
And that was at the point where we thought, we need to get help. Who can help us? Well, the mothers were the natural, obvious people. So that's when we, it was about, probably, I can't remember when it was, maybe 6 years ago? 5 years ago, we train the mothers, and now we hire, we probably have 6 of the mothers on staff, that we give a small stipend to. They do all the therapies. They do a little physical therapy, mostly Reiki, some water therapy. And they come, and all the children get treatments. We have 2 of the mothers who cook it for lunch, so we have a meal together. It's just a happy place. We do different programs with the moms on Saturdays. And children play and have fun and get therapy, and it's a real community building place.
Uh-huh. That's wonderful. And how do you, I guess one of the obvious questions is, how do you fund it?
Through donation. It's people just hear about it and donate money, and we seem to always have enough, so I guess that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's a great thing.
We don't advertise, it's just word of mouth. Mothers see other mothers in the clinic or on the bus, and they just tell them, and people just show up.
That's great. And as somebody who is listening to the program wanted to donate to the program, how would they go about doing that?
We can send money or check directly to us, and we have an account to fund for that.
Uh-huh.
It's called the Santa Nina Project. We also have a website that gives a little bit more description and pictures and all that kind of information.
Oh, okay. Well, the website will be on your e-card. So people can just go to that website, and then they can get hooked into your programs, whatever you're doing, right?
Yeah, and we have a daily or a monthly little newsletter that comes out, and it's just stories about the children or the moms and experiences that have happened.
Sounds wonderful. Great. And do you have any other projects that you're working on, or?
My newest is I started working at a, this was one of those ones where, you know, you just, I woke up in the middle of the night, 3 nights in a row, thinking about this homeless shelter run by 2 Loretto sisters.
Uh-huh.
I had never been down there. I didn't really know much about it. So I thought I better check it out. And they actually were looking for someone to do body work and work with the women. So I've been working down there on Mondays and sometimes Wednesdays. There are about 20 women there. It's a really neat place. They really work with the women to try to get them into school or get with jobs and back into society, living in apartments or houses. That's been real, surprisingly, joyful place to be. The women really respond to the Reiki. I heard him in the hallway. One lady asked, one had just come out from a treatment. Peggy and I, another sister here, we both go down and do Reiki. And she came out and they said, did you get massage therapy? And she said, no, I don't know exactly what it, they did something, but it was like a miracle. They just put their hands on me and it was like a miracle.
Wonderful.
I can't remember what it was called. But,
Oh, that's wonderful to be able to just live your life with this as your priority. I think that I'm starting to get a little envious of these projects and the time it takes. And you really need to have time and space. So one of the interesting things is, you know, when you, it's like I'm starting, I know this might be a not great metaphor or comparison, but anyway, it is where my brain is right now, because eating is very important to me, and somebody once described me as a professional foodie, because I'm either always thinking about when I'm going to eat, what I'm going to eat, or how I'm going to eat, and who's going to eat with me. So you notice that the operative word is eat.
Yeah.
And and I've been, it's interesting, I've been on a diet, and basically I'm just trying to eat, I have a shake in the morning, which is, you know, already prescribed what goes in it, and then I have 4 ounces of meat, and then a cup of vegetables for lunch and dinner, and then a piece of fruit after each meal. Mm-hmm. So that's been very interesting, but it really cuts down on how much time you spend trying to contemplate what you're eating. Mm-hmm. And I find that I have so much more time. I mean, it's just amazing. So, of course, I fill it with other things, but it is a really wonderful opportunity for me to see that life can be rewarding without spending half of my waking time thinking about food. So wow. I'm just wondering about how it would be in this very moment. I'm just wondering about how it would be if I didn't spend my time worrying about, I don't know, things that concern me in my everyday world. And I'm just wondering, for you, if that feels like the space that you have because you, answered a calling to be a sister. You know, I have maybe an unrealistic idea that you have made space in your life so that you can follow your heart. You know, there are a lot of things I want to do with my heart, but I always think of the million other things that I, in my life, that I need to do in order to clear the space for what I want to do with my heart, from my heart. So I find that often I don't get to do those things because I don't find time. So this time factor is really interesting. So I'm just wondering about how that is for you.
Well, I think, I know living in community, and that's probably one of the reasons I am living in community. I don't tend to be the most disciplined person. And living in community with others helps me to be more disciplined and create that space. I think that's a gift of living in community when everyone's focused on a ministry, on service, on prayer, on creating that space, being available to listen. I think that's one of the gifts of community and one of the calls to live that life out. I think it's for everyone. I mean, I don't know, it's not for everyone, but it works for me, and it works for how I want to live, what's congruent with my heart. But I do think it's hard when you live outside of community. For me, it would be.
Uh-huh.
I would find it difficult. You know, I probably don't have the same, a lot of the same worries and concerns as someone raising a family or, you know, trying to put food on the table. And that's a gift of the community. It's kind of, we all throw our money in the pot and then you take out what you need. So it enables me to do, you know, not everybody can say, I'm just going to go down and work at the homeless shelter and, you know, whatever. It's, so I think that is a gift of living in the community.
So can you talk a little bit about the practicalities of that? Like, do you, so I'm just trying to figure out if there's any way for, well, I don't know what to call it, but for people who are living in a situation like I am, how we could do this, like, if four of us got together, even though we may, well, I guess even just maintaining four spaces takes four times the amount of energy. So if you maintain one space, that's sort of a collection of time. Is that true, do you think?
I think so. I mean, you have one person getting the groceries instead of, you know, or you, one person does the finance. You know, you share jobs that probably if you live by yourself, you'd have to do all alone. I think whenever you have a group and you're all sharing the same focus and have the same, I guess, somewhat goals, how you want to live your life. I think it creates a lot more space and time. For me, logically, it does.
Right. Well, you know, the other thing that comes to mind right now for me is that one of the things that service offers all of us is a way to get outside of ourselves. Like, I see sometimes in the Reiki community that I live in, which we don't, of course, share the same living space. But sometimes we share the same space in the sense of, like right now I'm just on the eve of having a group of masters come. There are 27 of us and we're going to come and meet for a week. And, you know, we talk about this, our practice, and we're going to, you know, talk about what our concerns are in our practice and so on. But if we had a service project, you know, that all of us were focused on, it would take somehow our energy and focus it in a different way. So instead of like inward on ourselves, it would also be focused outward. So what I see is that you have this interesting, with your time, you have this interesting possibility to have a balance of this inner work, we could call it, or inner contemplation, and then taking that out into the world as service. This is how I romantically see it. Can you relate to this at all?
Oh yeah, I think anytime you have a group of people focused on something, I think that's all it takes to like to get the ball rolling, and then you put it out there and you know, it multiplies and grows. I think just having that inspiration, so that whatever that impetus from the heart, putting that out there and letting God, the field, Reiki, whatever, do the rest. I think that's important to follow those inspirations. I think even in our community, like I see that happen over and over again. One person has an idea and then you get two, three people involved and magnificent things happen. Schools were built, hospitals were, my sister started a lot of things in the beginning. First private school, hospital, and just many things.
Right.
I totally agree with you on that.
So do you all, and just tell me if I just start getting too personal. But so do you all have also community time for prayer and contemplation together?
Yeah, every morning we have meditation and prayer. sometimes in the evenings we do, and then we usually take one day a month where it's just a community day where we all kind of spend time in the retreat and just sharing where we are and what's going on and our prayer time.
There's a part of me that really longs for that. That's really interesting. I mean, I just find this coming up in me talking to you, and I'm just, it's like a little feeling inside of me that I haven't experienced before so clearly. So that's very interesting. I want to come to another little shift of topic when it comes to service, and that is there are groups of people now, and right now is a really good example, of Reiki students who are sending Reiki to, for instance, like the situation, we could call it, in Japan with the earthquake and the tsunami. And I think some people send it to the people who are affected by that and wanting to alleviate their suffering and to alleviate pain. And there are others who are sending it to the situation. I think, in my understanding, to somehow imbue the situation with more grace and more ease, and getting to a place of, you know, creating miraculous situations where suffering and pain are also relieved. So I'm just wondering what you think about that, because you're always, it seems like you have the opportunity to do really wonderful hands-on kind of person-to-person kind of service. And I'm wondering about this other facet of service, which kind of goes out into the ethers. I guess it's really like prayer on some level. I don't mean to be presumptuous, but that's a connection that I have.
I know in our community, like the older retired sisters, they spend hours and hours praying. And it's praying for the world, praying for situations, praying for people suffering. I know that's their ministry of service. They can't go out, and that is their ministry, is actually praying for others. We always make a conscious effort in our community to always, you know, pray for the world, pray for people suffering. That's always a part of it. I think I always think, you know, people weren't praying or sending Reiki or whatever, what would happen? We just stopped all of that. What would happen to the world? I think it's like, you know, I think there is no such thing as time and space. I mean, if you're there in your heart, whether you're there physically or in your heart, it's all just as powerful. And I think that's a really important part of service. And not everyone can go do the hands-on, so I think there's a part of service that for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really important part.
I never looked at it that way about what would happen if all the prayers and all the Reiki were just stopped. That's a kind of frightening thing.
I feel a lot, yeah. But, you know, I love that movie, It's a Wonderful Life.
Right.
I always think, well, if, then what? You know, you just have to do what, and I think if we all just listen to our hearts, it's natural for us to want to pray for those who are suffering or help those who are suffering in some way. You know? And service can take on so many faces, and we all have our, you know, ways that we can do it and limitations or time but I think, you know, if you're human and you listen to your heart, we all want to do service in some way. That's part of being human.
Part of being human.
Because we're all connected. I help you, I help myself. You know, we're all. Mm-hmm. And I think we really could see how much we're changed when we give to another or go out. It's like, I always think I always wish we could have little, X-ray lights, whatever. You could see what's happening to us energetically. I think we'd be amazed how we're helped and transformed when we give to another. I don't think we always realize that. Like when we give Reiki, we receive Reiki.
Right.
I think Reiki is such a wonderful teacher. It's just like, it's such a concrete, teaching or way that's helped me to understand, like, you know, I am not doing anything. It's God working through me. It's Reiki working through me. It doesn't matter if I'm, you know, a sinful person or if I'm whatever, you know, it's like, God doesn't care and Reiki doesn't care either. It's helped me many times. It's like, just get your head out of it and just do it. And just allow, you know, Reiki to do what it does. You don't have to be perfect. Just make magnificent things happen because we're not doing it. And I think that way with prayer too, just, we can just open our hearts to another and whatever that is, that love, that healing, that whatever it is, it just happens.
Well, I think you'd pointed out one of my little breaks in my connection of consciousness. That's what I would call it right now. my grandmother, of course, would always say, you know, just treat people and have no attachment to the outcome. You know, like no expectations, she would say. And I teach that. And it's how I practice hands-on Reiki. But what I realize is that in my idea of prayer when I was a child, I mostly prayed because I was desperate. And I was desperate because I wanted a certain result. Like if I didn't study for my exams, you know, I would just, you know, pray that I passed this test and that my parents would be proud of me. And I had a very specific outcome. And whether I got it or not, somehow that connection is there. And so I'm just thinking and having a kind of chuckle that somehow when it's not hands-on with the distant treatments, I end up feeling like I need to somehow know what the outcome is going to be, or I'm, you know, I need to be really precise about what I'm doing and where I'm sending it, and can I just send prayers? And you know, I think in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, I don't know because I have it's a great question I have to ask one of my Tibetan Buddhist friends. You know, they have prayer flags, which are really beautiful, and I love them, and they are prayers to relieve suffering and so on, and they don't have any expectations about what that's going to look like or how it's going to be. They just get sent out all the time, and somehow those prayers make a difference. And they've been doing this for millennia, and I know that, you know, in the Catholic Church, this is also true, that there's always somebody praying and sending out these prayers for, we might say, universal peace. Whatever that means. And I'm just thinking that I need to just be able to let go of my expectations about distant treatments and be able to send those without having attachment, I think.
Yeah, I can relate to what you're saying. But I think, you know, that our mind wants to know. It wants to have outcomes. It wants to, it judges, it analyzes. But for me, what helps me is like, I just really have to drop into my heart. If I can really be there, there is no judgment, there is no analysis, there is no outcome. It just knows.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of like this, I kind of know if I'm in my head. It's like, cause I want to know too. I'm like, well, you know, I like the science part, I love it. You know, the figuring out the end result and, you know, all the things that you were talking about.
Uh-huh.
But I know when I'm really in my heart, it doesn't matter. Like, you just know. We know someplace that we're connected to everyone, and we know when we send out love, it gets there. We know that. But our minds try to, I think, tell us otherwise sometimes for whatever reason.
Well, it's really interesting because when I do these interviews, every interview that I do, I also receive something. And this is very evident today that I'm receiving something about service and about these distant treatments and so on, because we've been having a conversation online a little bit about, when people send distant treatments to people in Japan right now, that's the focus. How does that affect us, and why are we doing it, and what is our motivation, and so on? And, I've gotten comments like, well, I don't know why I'm doing it. I'm just doing it because it feels like that's what I need to be doing. And then other people are saying, well, but I want to do it for the right reasons. And I'm kind of saying that to myself. And yet I have this real connection with Japan. I realized that was my realization in hearing the reports of the earthquake and the tsunami, that I have this connection with Japan that is not about really about where my ancestors came from, but really about where Reiki came from. And that's been very interesting for me, to just connect back to this land of origin where this practice came from. And I'm just wondering if you have anything to say to that, because it's been a real big question mark for me lately.
It's interesting. I just think I think we need to listen to more those when we feel like you said, you have this connection. I think our key to our evolution and transformation and openness and allowing is really, really listen to, like, you're connected there. And not trying to figure it out, but just go with that. Go with that. I'm feeling connected, so this is why I'm doing this. And this is where I'm saying this because this is what I'm trying to do. It's kind of like, it's hard not to listen to my mind sometimes, because it's like, well, what if, because I gotta make sure everything's, right. But in these instances when I do just listen to my heart, much more amazing things happen, and then that unfolds something else. Listening to that part of you that feels that connection, just follow it. There may be something more there that opens you up to who knows what. But I think we'll never have the right motivation, because we're human. Like, as long as we have minds here, we're going to keep trying to figure out things, but I think it is possible to have that balance of listening more and more to our hearts. And maybe that's where, we're moving evolutionary-wise. It seems like more and more people are talking about the heart and compassion and, just some of the topics you've had on your radio show. People are talking about that more and feeling that and asking. And maybe that's where we're moving more into living more in our hearts rather than the mind. I don't know.
Well, it seems like it to me. And when, in the 1980s, when Reiki first came out, one of the things that was picked up, especially in the European countries, I heard it very loudly and very clearly, that Reiki was healing, but it was healing. What the healing was in general was to come out of their minds and back into their hearts. And a lot of this had to do with their own participation, culture, each country in the two world wars, and how much that affected their emotional presence and how tied down they were a lot by that, and by the post-war kinds of things that were happening, like the Berlin Wall, for instance, and so on. So Reiki really opened people up, and you know, there was a lot of tears that happened during Reiki classes and afterwards, because there was just a sudden shift from mind to heart, and then the balance happened. And I think that that's been an amazing process there, and it hasn't been so noticeable here in the United States, because we haven't had really that kind of experience in our cultural memory. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's where it's leading us. That, you know, Reiki is amazing. I just remember my first class, you know, you don't understand this, just do it, you know, it will happen. You know, you don't have to know what's going on.
Uh-huh.
And it is a constant teacher, I think, of all things. It's such a concrete thing that I can put my hands on me or another person, and it happens.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to do anything, and especially my mind. I don't have to do anything with my mind. So, you know, I think sometimes it sounds so simplistic, whatever that, you know, but it really is powerful when something is happening without you in charge and controlling your mind, because we're so used to doing that on, you know, the degrees we've gotten, the things, you know, things that we've accomplished, we can say, you know, we've done it because of our intelligence or our mind or our determination or whatnot. But Reiki is so, you don't have to do anything. You just have to be there and do it, and it happens. And I think that whole thing of just trust. And we're able to trust because we see results. But I think it's just a really powerful tool, and it's really wonderful that we have this teacher for at this time.
I agree. Well, we're at the end of our time, Carol. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Phyllis. It was really nice to be with you this morning.
Yeah, it was a wonderful conversation. Thank you for your openness and your willingness to share and your life of service. It's really inspiring.
Thank you, and thank you for yours, too. You have a wonderful life of service as well.
Oh, thank you. I'm just beginning to recognize that, which is another interesting opening. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks. So this is Phyllis Rumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.